week of July 19th, 2009, this is Showbiz Sandbox, Episode 12, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Karen Woodward.
And in New York, I'm Michael Gills.
Today, we're really going to be focusing a lot on television because the Emmy nominations were announced earlier this week. We're also going to be talking about Harry Potter and its huge opening. As well, we'll talk about some entertainment journalists who are making headlines of their own. Joining us today is Corby Ghosh, a Los Angeles-based TV addict who spent 5 years writing about television. She spent 3.5 years at the E! Network, where she authored the daily column Corby's Quickie, your TV cheat sheet, and wrote and reported for E! Online and E! News Watch with Kristen. She has worked for Yahoo TV, hosting their So You Think You Can Dance Buzz sessions, as well as contributing to several features, including their fall TV preview. Since May 2008, she joined the team at ZapToIt.com to author her own blog called Corby TV. It can be found at blog.zaptoit.com/CorbyTV. Corby's blog shares scoops, spoilers, and breaking news with a community of fellow TV fanatics. She often appears on the TV Guide channel, delivering her expert opinion on the television topic of the day, and she has filmed guest spot appearances on series such as Scrubs and Greek. Today, we are delighted that she is joining us to discuss this year's Emmy nominations. Welcome, Corby.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, were there any big surprises for you as a TV fanatic with this year's nominations?
There were a few big surprises this year. Maybe not big, but well-deserved and that we haven't seen before. I was really excited to see the supporting cast of 30 Rock finally nominated. Jane Krakowski, Jack McBrayer, and Tracy Morgan. They hadn't gotten any Emmy love in the previous few years when, of course, the show and Tina Fey and Alec Baldwin have been big stars in that arena. So it's great to see them nominated because the show wouldn't be half as funny without them. I was excited to see Jim Parsons from The Big Bang Theory nominated. You know, we've sort of gotten away from the traditional three-camera sitcom in the last, you know, 5-10 years. It's not as popular anymore, but or at least not as cool. And The Big Bang Theory is a great example of a show that still has that, you know, old school vibe to it, but it's hilarious. And Jim Parsons is one of the big reasons for that.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, Jim Parsons was one of the people who announced the Emmy nominations.
He was. You know, it's funny when they when they announce whoever's going to come out and at 5 o'clock in the morning and be the person delivering the news, because you usually are like, all right, that person's probably going to be nominated. So it was good to see him. He looked thrilled. It was cute. He had a little grin on his face.
I liked your comment in your blog. You said, would announcing the nominations at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, noon Eastern, be so insane?
I've often wondered about
that. It's true. It's like, really? I have to get up at 5 a.m.? I don't get it.
You have to do the same thing for the Academy Awards, actually, too, because they announce them so that the morning talk shows in New York, which all tape in New York, have the nominations to talk about that day.
Yeah. No, it's true. It totally makes sense. They want to get the New York shows, you know, talking about it. It makes complete sense. But for my sleep schedule, not so much.
Now, you mentioned Big Bang Theory, which is a sitcom on CBS. It doesn't look like it was nominated for Best Comedy Series.
It was not nominated.
But How I Met Your Mother was.
Exactly. Both on the same network. And How I Met Your Mother is going into its 5th season, and this is its 1st nomination. So, you know, maybe it takes the Academy maybe a little bit of time to recognize a show like that. And actually, I was tweeting with one of the actors, Kunal Nair, who's on The Big Bang Theory, and he said, no love for The Big Bang Theory. I said, you know, Big Bang Theory, I bet you will eventually get that comedy nomination from the Emmys. It's just going to take them a few years, you know? It'll happen.
And actually, we should say that your Twitter account can be found at Corby Girl. Is that the account you want people going to?
It is. It's Corby Girl. KORBIGIRO.
Other comedy series nominated were Entourage. Of course, that's the HBO show that is a little bit of an inside Hollywood show starring, I can't pronounce his name.
Adrien Grenier,
thank you.
But it also stars Kevin Dillon, and you commented on that on your blog, that you didn't think you really deserved it this year, but if you won, you'd be happy with it, right?
I don't think that was me. I don't think it was me. Someone else on Zap Show may have said that. What I actually had written about was a really big surprise was that Jeremy Piven from Entourage was not nominated. And he's been nominated the last 4 years in a row. He's won the last three. This year, no nomination at all. So that was a bit surprising. That I think was a shocker, if you will. I think there are a lot of entertainment news shows that had set up interviews with him ahead of time for Emmy nomination morning, and then they have to show up at the house and he hasn't been nominated.
Oh,
so uncomfortable. I would think anyway, but because I guess people would think he was a sure thing.
Corby, why do you think he wasn't? Was it a fallout from his stint on Broadway?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. He got so much bad press from leaving that that Broadway show and citing the whole mercury poisoning thing. I would not be surprised. I mean, the Emmys are known for awarding people over and over and over again. Once they like you, which clearly they like Jeremy Piven, four nominations in a row, three wins in a row, they don't let go of you. I mean, look at Tony Shalhoub from Monk. That show lost buzz years ago, and he's continuously nominated again this year. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was that. Maybe the Academy was like, you know, they got a bad taste in it. Maybe they got a little of that mercury poisoning. I don't know. But the cool thing is that it opens the door for Neil Patrick Harris. He's been nominated the last 2 years. You know, he's in this category with Piven. He continuously gets, you know, edged out by Piven. And, I like the chorus of yays. We're all on his side. I bet you this is going to be his year. He's not only going to MC the show, but I bet you he's going to take that statue home finally.
Well, he was nominated in the Supporting Actor for Comedy Series category, along with John Cryer from the sitcom Two and a Half Men, Kevin Dillon from Entourage, as we mentioned, Jack McBrayer from 30 Rock, Tracy Morgan from 30 Rock, and Rainn Wilson from The Office.
Yeah, I love them all. I love all of those people. I guess I wouldn't, the only one that I maybe would be like, about is John Cryer. Not that I have anything against John Cryer, but Two and a Half Men isn't a show that I watch regularly. The rest of the people on that list, love them, would be happy to see any of them win.
Well, The Office was also nominated for Best Comedy Series, and that's one of my favorite shows, along with 30 Rock, which picked up a record 22 nominations. Weeds was also nominated in that category. And I was really happy to see Flight of the Conchords, the HBO series, was nominated as well, along with How I Met Your Mother from CBS. And I don't know if this is a surprise or not, but Family Guy was nominated, the animated Fox series.
Yeah. The exciting thing about that is that that show was canceled not once, but twice by Fox. It's a real, like, you know, rising from the ashes type of story, which is cool. And Family Guy, I think, because it's so sort of, you know, really pushes the envelope with its humor and it's very cutting edge, has been overlooked in the past. That's one of the reasons. And also because it's an animated series. I think the only other series that's been nominated for an Emmy in that category is like The Flintstones, which is like hundreds of years ago.
Long before television was even invented.
But don't you find it a little depressing that it wasn't South Park or The Simpsons? You know, The Simpsons 10 years ago, or which was the best sitcom on television, or King of the Hill, which was a great family sitcom, or South Park, which is still really funny, and I think it's in its prime the last 2-3 years. You know, all those shows I think are so much better. To have Family Guy be the first one is, to me, a little depressing.
I'm a fan of Family Guy. I like it, so I think it's all right. I think the humor is pretty smart, in my opinion. I think it's very, like, of the moment. South Park, too, though, you're absolutely right. But maybe it just comes down to the campaign. I think maybe Fox really, I think people forget they actually, these shows, the networks and the studios campaign hard and put a lot of money into getting them nominated. And maybe that's why, you know, South Park hasn't gotten the nod and Family Guy did.
Well, speaking of networks, if you look at the drama series category, you begin to see just what kind of power mainstream networks have, because only two shows were nominated from I don't want to say mainstream networks, but non-cable networks. Big Love is from HBO. Breaking Bad is an AMC show. Damages is from FX. Dexter is from Showtime. House is from Fox. So that's a non-cable network. Lost is the ABC 1 hour drama, and Mad Men is from AMC. Now, Mad Men is very close to my heart. I love that show.
So great, so great.
That's now, a couple of the people from Mad Men were nominated, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Elizabeth Moss was nominated. John Hamm.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about those? Good choices?
They're fantastic choices. I mean, that show just blows me away. I think anyone, if you watch 2-3 episodes, you're hooked. You don't want the season to end. And the second season was even better than the first, in my opinion. They won the Emmy last year. But the only thing that I was a little bit disappointed with was that January Jones wasn't nominated. And she, I thought, was fantastic in the second season of Mad Men. Certainly John Hamm and Elizabeth Moss are deserving, but January Jones, you know, playing that, you know, jilted housewife who's just sort of getting the courage up to, you know, stand up for herself. I thought she had a phenomenal season. So that was a little bit of a surprise to me to see her left out.
Absolutely. I miss Christina Hendricks in the supporting actress category. She is so sexy and wonderful as the redheaded secretary. I think she's just great. And I'm sorry she didn't get nominated. And some of the office workers, the men.
They're great.
Yeah.
Nominated with John Hamm in the drama series category is Simon Baker from The Mentalist.
Yeah, does he deserve that?
Yes.
You know, I couldn't tell you because I don't watch the show, but I do know that a lot of people were like, really?
He totally deserves
so
it. It's a light show, but it's the only big new hit from a network in the last 2 or 3 years. And he's so charming and appealing on the show. And it's not pure lightness. He has a little complexity to him. I think he's a TV star. It's his, you know, second or third series. And they finally found the sweet spot for him. And he's really appealing if you watch it.
Hmm. And can we talk about an actress in a drama series, Mariska Hargitay, again? Really?
Like I said, the Emmys like their people. Once you're in the club, it's hard to get pushed out. You got to claim mercury poisoning.
Well, what drama do you miss? What drama do you think should be on the list? And what would you take off to find it a slot?
You know, that's tough because I think all of the dramas that were nominated are well-deserving. People talk about television being, you know, not a great medium. That's total BS. There's so much good TV on right now, I think. Every single one of those dramas nominated is deserving, and there are more that should have made the list. Friday Night Lights being one of them, which
yes.
I love.
Battlestar Galactica?
Yes.
Battlestar Galactica. I mean, there's just so many. True Blood, Rescue Me. Rescue Me right now is easily the best drama on television. I mean, it's summer and there's not a lot on, but Rescue Me is a fantastic show, so well written, so well acted. It's just very funny. I think maybe one of the reasons it always gets overlooked in this category is because it's more of a dramedy. It's one of its strongest points is its comedy. But that and True Blood, I think, was also a big surprise. But for me, the most egregious mistake is leaving Friday Night Lights off the list. And, you know, it's got a couple more seasons coming up. That's going to be it. We'll see if it ever gets the Emmy love it deserves.
Why do you think that show gets no love?
I think because of the ratings. I think a lot of times, and it's not in every case, because Mad Men doesn't have a huge following. It's a cable show. And, you know, same 30 Rock, which is a network show, also not high ratings. But I think the buzz around those shows makes up for the fact that not a lot of people are watching them. Friday Night Lights has buzz among the critics and among the small group of people that actually watch the show. But as far as overall, you know, Emmys always are forgetting about shows that not a lot of people are talking about. But it doesn't matter if it was popular or not. This is not where it shouldn't be, you know, it's not a popularity contest. You know, if you actually watch the shows and we're going on merit, that show, it's ridiculous that it hasn't been nominated. I mean, it's so good. And to be a network show that is of that quality, because, you know, they don't have the same freedoms as the cable shows. To be a network show and be that good, they deserve a lot more. So,
well, yeah. Also nominated in the drama series, and here's what I find kind of interesting. You have Glenn Close from Damages. Now, she's started out as, I guess, a Broadway actress. I don't know, Michael, you can confirm that or not, but she is certainly known as a movie actress. You also have Holly Hunter, also known as a movie actress, in Saving. She was nominated for Saving Grace. And you have Kara Sedgwick, also known as a movie actress, And she was nominated for The Closer.
Mm-hmm. And Sally Field also originally moved. Well,
I don't know how
I skipped both.
Yeah,
TV, Sally Field, Flying Nun,
Gidget.
And Gidget, yeah. But in my day, she was movie actress.
Yeah, I think she fits into that category definitely. I think this goes back to what I was saying before about there being so much good TV on. I think TV is the place to be right now. It's the film industry. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a movie person. TV is my thing, but I know that a lot of film actors and actresses are now looking towards TV for that good material, and that's why. I mean, look, and then every year, every season, there's someone else. You know, Jada Pinkett Smith, always doing movies and has a very successful career. Now she's doing a TNT show.
Well, these actors and actresses especially, I think they migrate to TV once they hit their 40s. You know, the movie roles dry up for them because Hollywood is so stupid. And so they say, you know, they're getting well-written roles for them on television. Why wouldn't they go to TV?
Right.
Well, then what do you think about Lindsay Lohan, who also known for her movies? Of course, she's known for probably being...
her rehab stints as well.
Yeah, I was trying to... a polite way to say she's known for being Hollywood's party girl. But she's doing a television series now.
You know what? She's doing a TV movie. And you know what's funny about that is that that actually wasn't her choice. From what I understand, that was originally a feature film. When she shot it, it was supposed to be a feature, but nobody bought it. And so I think it's on ABC Family. ABC Family bought it. It was supposed to originally be a feature film, and
yeah,
they were the only people that that wanted it. So, yeah, I'm sure she's not too excited about that. She's probably pretty pissed off about it because I think it brings down her status a little bit.
Yeah, because her partying ways definitely didn't do that.
It's her own fault. Sure. But she didn't agree to it. This is something that happened out of her control.
Speaking of ABC Family, I'm jealous that you aren't Greek because that's one of my guilty pleasures.
Isn't it great? I love Greek. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I filmed that this week. They gave me a couple lines on the show. So,
what are you doing?
I've always written. What's up?
What are you doing? What's your role?
Oh, I'm playing 20-something ZBZ alum. It's Founders.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's Founders Week, where all the sort of sorority alum come back to the house and they try and get them to donate money and stuff. So they had like a 20-something alum, 30-something, 40-something, and so on. So I got to do a little scene with Ashley and Rebecca. It was fun.
Which actor are you most looking forward to meeting?
Well, you know, I've met all of them. I that's the reason I actually got on the show is because I've loved it from the beginning, and I've always written nice things about it. I think it's easily the best written show on ABC Family, and it's smart and it's funny. And so I've always given them a lot of love, and the producers, you know, have noticed, and the creator of the show, you know, I think this is just like a little thank you for me being so nice to them.
Cool.
So yeah, so I've met all of them before. I've done a lot of set visits and gone to events where they're at. And, yeah.
Well, you mentioned that Jeremy Piven had a whole bunch of interviews lined up after his supposed or predicted Emmy nomination, which he did not receive. But those that did get nominated on Zap to It, you guys were talking about how they were all on Twitter mentioning their nominations in one way or another, which I found kind of interesting because before you used to have to go to the newspapers or Entertainment Tonight to find out what a star or actress or actor or filmmaker thought about being nominated. Now you can just turn to Twitter and they're telling you firsthand.
Isn't that crazy? It's so crazy. I love it, actually. You know, when I first heard about the concept of Twitter, I thought, that is the most self-absorbed and, like, ridiculous concept I've ever heard. Like, why would anyone care what some single person is doing at this time? Like, it seemed ridiculous to me. But as I've been forced to now have a Twitter account because of work, and you start following people, I think it actually is a very useful tool if you use it the right way. It's cool to be able to keep up with certain celebrities if you're, you know, if you're into them or, you know, certain news subjects. And the Emmys, yeah, is a perfect example of that. It's like you don't have to go through a publicist or an agent or, you know,
kind of nice.
Wait and wait. Yeah, it's great. It's instant and it's unfiltered, straight from that celebrity, and that's fantastic.
Well, somebody who unfortunately was not on Twitter, of course, was Farrah Fawcett, who passed away a few weeks ago. She received a posthumous Emmy Award nomination for her, I guess, Farrah's Story. It was a documentary about her battle with cancer.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm very glad I got to see that. It aired on a Friday night, and usually I'm out on Friday nights. I'll admit, after the week of TV, the last thing I want to do is watch TV on a Friday night, but...
Well, plus you have four DVRs in your apartment, so, you know, you can...
That's true. That is true, but I try not to even, unless Friday Night Lights is on or Battlestar Galactica, I try not to even record things on Friday. I got to take a day off. But I was home that night when it first premiered, and I didn't want to watch it, but as soon as I turned it on, I got sucked in. It was really, I don't know if any of you watched it, it really sucked you in, and it was so sort of raw, and it was like you followed her on her journey from the moment she found out through all the different treatments and the heartbreak and the triumph, and it was really well done. I mean, really, really well done. And Nalana Stewart, also her, you know, best friend who was in it and produced it, was also nominated for Farrah's Story. So that's nice to see. I'm happy about that.
Now, somebody such as yourself who's involved in writing about television every day, what do you make of the news over the weekend that the Los Angeles Times reported that American Idol judge Paula Abdul may not come back to the next season, which starts in January?
No, I find it interesting because last year when they added Cara DioGuardi, there was so much, you know, there was so much press and so much of an effort on Fox's part to say this has nothing to do with Paula leaving. We just want to add another voice to the show, and Cara has such great expertise. Now it seems like they may be using, because I don't think they want to get rid of Paula. I do think they want to keep Paula. I think they'd be happy to keep Paula on forever. But I think they're using Cara as some sort of leverage to say, listen, we don't need you. So you're not going, you know, you're not going to pull the type of salary that Simon or Ryan is, because we don't have to keep you.
And that's exactly what the LA Times said. That's the almost word for word exactly. Well, not word for word, but that is precisely the thinking the LA Times says.
Yeah, I find it offensive personally. I do, or not personally, but I would tend to agree with the LA Times then, because I don't know. Maybe I'm feeling a bias because she's a woman. I don't know. I just don't think
vaguely sexist.
It does. I think Seacrest, they just doubled his salary to something like, I mean, don't quote me, but I think it's like something like $45 million for a 3-year contract.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and then Simon is also, we don't know the exact number, but it's probably somewhere in that ballpark, if not higher.
Actually, they're talking about a $144 million contract for him, although he kind of scoffs that off, that there's no way he's going to make that much. But the LA Times mentioned it's within the $144 million range.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And Paula can't even get an offer. She doesn't even offer yet.
Well, that's what her manager says, is that it was somewhat insulting that she hasn't received an offer. And quoting the LA Times article here, it says, Abdul is already looking toward a future without Idol. She's not a happy, and this is her manager speaking, David Sonnenberg, and he's quoted as saying, she's not a happy camper as a result of what's going on. She's hurt. She's angry. I think at this point, we're going to be considering everything, including some kind of a competition show. She has tremendous ideas for a whole variety of shows. So she's already working on her next gig.
Right.
No, she's not. This isn't going to, this is the LA Times carrying water for Bill's manager. She's not going to leave the show, and they're going to want her on the show, and they'd be fools if they let her go. It's not going to happen. They just haven't come to a deal yet. Simon Cowell said the same thing when his last contract was up. He said, oh, I've got ideas for other shows. People want me to host shows that are going to compete with this. There's no way they'll let her go. It's the number one show on television, and you do not want to mess with that formula. Those four people are the only, you know, the only solid ones you've got.
Well, yeah, but it's a lot more fun if I throw a little bomb like that in for you guys to respond to.
Do you guys think that then, if you're of that opinion, do you think that Paula has a lot more leverage than the network wants her to think? I mean, do you think she can play hardball and not, you know, and not sign until they give her some, give her a deal that she feels is worthy of her?
I don't
think
so.
Yes, I do.
I don't think so at all. I think that she's somewhat dispensable, and they kind of proved that last year by adding the fourth judge.
No, they didn't. She had her best year, and everybody hated Cara DioGuardi, and she got bad reviews. And they and Paula had her best year in years. And you don't mess with the formula. You don't. You don't want to. They're scared to death of getting rid of Randy or Paula or Simon or Ryan. They know it would be stupid. Why risk it? It's the number one show. She's dippy and kooky, and you talk about her the next day.
I mean, they're thinking of making that animated show Futurama. They're thinking of making that Futurama show without the original voice cast.
Yeah, but well, Corby, what do you think? Do you think that she has the leverage?
I do think so. I think you're right about the formula being what it is, and if you take one, you know, one part of it out, it's not the same, you know, it's not the same show. And it is absolutely true that there was a lot of, not necessarily backlash, maybe that's too harsh of a word, but you know, a lot of people didn't like Cara DioGuardi. I think she made up for a little of the back talk against her in the finale when she got on stage and sang in that bikini, which was a good move on her part.
I was embarrassed for her when she did that.
Really? I thought she was great. Yeah. I thought she did a great job. I thought, you know, she was sort of modest with a little coat over her. I think if she came out in the full bikini, even though her body's fantastic, maybe that would have been a little much, but I thought it was funny. I thought it was a little funny, you know, thing for her to do.
I didn't think she needed to do it. I thought she really sunk to a level that she didn't need to go to.
In case you're wondering, Corby, both Michael and Karen are huge American Idol fans. I, on the other hand, have never actually watched the show.
I went to the concert this week.
Oh, how was it?
It was good. It was good. We can talk about it later.
Wow. Well, I'm also a fan of the reality show So You Think You Can Dance, which, Corby, you covered extensively, I believe.
Yeah, Kat Deely was robbed.
Are you?
Oh, yeah, she was totally robbed. It's just ridiculous. You know, that's what I was going to say, actually, is that I do watch Idol because I have to for this job. But So You Think You Can Dance is really my show. I think it's fantastic. I think the level of talent on it is unbelievable, and that it doesn't necessarily get the amount of love that Idol does, but it should because it's fantastic. And yes, I think it's crazy that Kat Deely is never nominated in the best host category. She's easily the best host on TV. She's so natural and just she's just a great person to.
I think she's better than Ryan Seacrest.
Oh, absolutely, no question. I think there's no question. It's just, again, you know, Idol has a lot more buzz around it than So You Think You Can Dance does. So,
and dance is much better than Dancing with the Stars. I'd much rather watch people who can actually dance.
No question.
That Tom Bergeron was nominated for reality host, that's just embarrassing.
I know. You know, the whole Dancing with the Stars versus So You Think You Can Dance really irks me. And it is funny because in the choreography category, So You Think You Can Dance pretty much swept it. They were not, four of the choreographers or choreography teams, five choreographers, four teams were nominated, yet So You Think You Can Dance is not nominated for Best Reality Competition Show. Dancing with the Stars is, doesn't make any sense to me. And it just really irks me. It's just, yeah, exactly as you said, it's, why would you watch people who can't dance over people who can? What?
I totally agree.
Well, you know, I'm waiting for the Emmys to actually start nominating some of the web series that we see. You mentioned Neil Patrick Harris earlier. He was in a really good web series that Joss Whedon put together.
And nominated for an Emmy.
It was nominated for an Emmy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Dr. Horrible Sing-Along Blogs. Absolutely. Yep. It'll win. It'll beat Battlestar Galactica's online thing and Kenneth the Page Boys webpage, and there's something else in there.
You see, this is why you need to scroll all the way to the bottom of the Emmy nominations list, which we will post a link to in the show notes. But yeah, I had no idea. Well, I wonder then if...
It's called, the program is called Special Class Program Short Format Live Action Entertainment Programs, also known as Webisodes. Battlestar Galactica, Bruce Springsteen's Halftime Show, The Daily Show, Correspondence, Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog, and 30 Rock's Kenneth the Webpage.
If Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog does not win, there is no justice. And I'm a huge Springsteen fan, but still. Now, Corby, are you guys going to start writing about these types of webisodes? I know that Tony Hale is Tony Hale from Arrested Development. He's the actor that played
Buster.
Yeah, Buster.
Buster on Arrested Development. Yeah. You know, that's a really good question. I've been sort of teetering back and forth because there's so much good TV on. It's like, do I want to sort of, you know, jump into this other arena? But I think so much is shifting to online, and there's so much good stuff on online that it's only a matter of time before we start covering the web series the same as we do TV. It's really just a matter of time. I mean, the networks already send us web series stuff. The Office, I mean, NBC, you know, does Office webisodes, and I get those in the mail. Heroes does webisodes. I get those from sent from the network. So, yeah, it's really just a matter of time.
And NBC is behind Tony Hale's, well, I guess Tony Hale isn't the creator of the webisode or the web series. That the web series is based on a Sundance short film called Control, CTRL. Right. And NBC is behind it. They're the ones producing it, and Nesty is the sponsor. And it's kind of funny. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it, but I've heard about it. And you know, whatever anything Tony Hale does, I'll give it a look. I think he's great, and we miss him on Arrested Development. And he's done a few other things since, but nothing that's sort of that's taken. So hopefully, this will be successful. And I also like Steve Howey, who I think is probably best known for Reba. He played sort of the dim-witted, you know, right. Son-in-law on that show. But he was like the highlight of that show. He's a good comedic actor. So the two of them together are probably a good team.
Well, the series Control can be found on iTunes. And basically, Tony Hale is an office worker who manages to control his life through his keyboard. Control Z actually undoes his life.
So it's like Adam Sandler's movie Click.
Exactly.
In the online version.
Exactly. That's exactly what it's like.
Yeah, it sounds like a kooky concept, but I guess if it's produced well, it could work.
But as you mentioned, a lot of stuff is moving online, so much so that Comcast is now teaming up with several networks to, I guess it's TV on demand. I don't know what they're calling it, TV everywhere. On demand online is what it's called. They will offer a web authentication system that will allow 5,000 Comcast customers in markets across the country to verify their cable TV subscription in order to access programming online at ComcastFanCast.com and Comcast.net, sites at no extra cost, according to the Wall Street Journal. And that brought the conversation to a screeching halt.
Well, you know, anything technical is always boring as hell to me.
Corby, do you have a sling box or how do you, I'm sure you watch TV online sometimes. I catch up on Greek sometimes.
Yeah, I do watch online sometimes. And I did have a sling box at one point, but I found it somewhat difficult to use. I don't know if it was my computer at the time or if it was just that I don't particularly like watching TV online. If I can record it on DVR, much better than watching it online. Of course, you have to sit through the commercials when you watch stuff online. I think if something is only available online and it's made for the web is one thing. But as far as, like, catching up on TV that is, you know, first airs on a network or cable, I prefer not to watch it on my computer. But I'm... You know, just one person. I know I have a lot of friends that watch TV online.
No, I agree with you. I hate it. I prefer to snuggle down into my couch.
Well, I can tell you that folks like Comcast and Time Warner, they're really happy to hear you say things like that. Because, of course, this whole play that Comcast is trying to put together is because they're afraid that people will start canceling their cable in lieu of watching television online.
You know, I don't know. I can't really make a prediction on that one because I do know that there are a lot of people just in my life that I know that don't have cable subscriptions and will watch TV online exclusively. And I don't know if the, like, generation coming up will be so used to watching TV in their computer that it, you know, that could actually happen. But I think, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm never going to be watching TV exclusively on the computer. And I think a lot of people would agree with me.
I think it's more options, you know, people, it's crazy, you know, Gossip Girl or iCarly or, Kings will be on television. And the next day people are paying $2 to download it on iTunes. So, you know, people are going to watch TV any way they want or can, you know, they'll watch it on their phone. They'll watch it on their computer. They'll watch it on the DVR. It just gives us more freedom and options.
They'll download it off of a BitTorrent.
Yeah. Well, at least the other ways are legal.
Yeah.
Right. What that says, though, is that boundaries, geographical boundaries, are being obliterated. So something that airs in the UK, like Doctor Who, you can actually watch in the US within hours.
Mm-hmm. That's the way it should be.
Right, but that's not what cable networks believe.
Well, BBC makes a lot of stuff. As we learned a week or two ago, the BBC makes a lot of stuff. All the radio is available immediately, and their TV will be soon enough. Everything on the BBC you'll be able to watch online in 5 years, absolutely. When the new Doctor Who comes on BBC, you'll be able to watch it online. You won't have to wait till BBC America or Sci-Fi or Sci-Fi, if that's how you pronounce it, picks it up.
Yeah, what is the deal with their name change?
What do you think of that, Corby?
The Sci-Fi name change?
Yeah, the Sci-Fi.
I don't get it.
It's stupid.
I don't get it at all. I don't know why they're messing with it. It makes me, I guess... I take it or leave it, you know.
Just so listeners understand what we're talking about here, Sci-Fi, the Sci-Fi network, used to be SCI-FI, and they've just decided to change it to SYFY so that they can branch out so that they don't have to just show sci-fi programming.
Yeah, so let's continue to call our network Sci-Fi. That's great. That's a fantastic idea.
Yeah. I think it's like, what? Yeah. I don't...
Yeah, Corby, we'll see.
Zaptude is actually, I shouldn't be talking badly about it. Zaptude is actually partnered with the Sci-Fi Network for Comic-Con. We're getting a lot of exclusive content from them and access to their talent next week when we go down to San Diego. So I'm going to keep my mouth shut on this one from now on, but yeah, I don't really get it either.
Well, we love Sci-Fi. We love Battlestar Galactica. They get ripped off. They absolutely should have been nominated at least this year, if not the last 3 or 4 years, and it's just a silly name change. But do you think channels are in danger? Like AMC, I understand how Mad Men fits in with American movie classics to a degree, but Breaking Bad, I don't know if that really helps AMC. To me, it doesn't fit into their core network programming, and even if it's a hit, it seems to suddenly make your channel not distinct. We have the Cartoon Network doing live-action shows. I mean, to me, even if a show works, sometimes it can hurt you when it gets so far away from your brand. If Sci-Fi starts doing, you know, romance, you know, 1800 romance series, does that make any sense?
Well, you know what, though? If you think about it, this has been going on for a long time. I mean, look at MTV. Is there any music on the show? I mean, I think Michael Jackson has to die for them to play music videos during the day.
Nice. So,
and you mean that literally, of course.
What's that?
Yes, you mean
that literally.
Literally. So, you know, this has been going on for a long time. I think if you get away from your brand, yeah, you know, maybe it doesn't make so much sense, but it's all about the bottom line, and if you're making money and you've got a good product on, well, okay, it doesn't necessarily fit with the brand, but that's all right. You don't have to change your name to some, you know, silly, I don't know, strange version of what it was in the first place.
I mean, essentially, people go to channel 128 or whatever. They don't really, from my way of thinking, care whether it's on AMC or Bravo, or they just know what channel to go to.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
I guess this goes back to what Sperling was saying about Comcast. It's just there are all these options now. People just watch. They don't even think about what network a show is on sometimes, I guess. You know, Damages could be on any channel. Doesn't have to be on FX.
Right.
Yeah. Agreed.
Well, Corby, certainly we hope you have fun down in San Diego next week at Comic-Con, and we really appreciate you coming on to talk about the Emmy nominations and all things TV, really, since we touched on numerous topics. Of course, your blog can be found at, is it blog or blogs?
It's blog, B-L-O-G.
blog.zaptoit.com/CorbyTV. We will, of course, post a link in the show notes, and you can be followed on Twitter, Corby Girl. Is the name to look up.
That's it. Yep. Thanks for having me. I had a great time. It was fun.
Our pleasure. We look forward to hearing how Comic-Con went.
Yeah, come back.
Yay. I'm a little frightened, to be honest with you, but hopefully it'll be all right.
No, though, you're so excited when girls show up at Comic-Con. You'll do great.
It's my first time. They want me to wear a t-shirt that says, I'm a Comic-Con virgin. So we'll see.
Don't fall for that.
Why do I have a feeling that when they get that t-shirt for you, they're going to actually have like a mistake or a typo and they'll just forget the Comic-Con part?
That would be no good.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. I had a great time.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
That was very nice of Corby to join us. She's fantastic.
Yeah, I really liked her.
I'm jealous she gets to go on Greek.
I'm just jealous of her life, okay? I want to be Corby.
And title. We're always looking for that perfect podcast title that's somewhat irreverent and yet sort of captures the news we're reporting. And sure enough, Karen, you do it every week.
I know I do.
There's very little else to report in the news this week, except for this little movie that opened after, I guess, it was slightly delayed and a few people had a problem with that. And now it opened. And I guess it's somewhat of a big deal because it made, I think, $18 million at its midnight show. It broke all records, or $22 million at its midnight show.
So that's one show?
Yes.
Yes. The midnight screening that I went to, I helped. I helped it get to the $22 million.
Oh, I'm so happy for you.
Yes, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, according to the Los Angeles Times, conjured up $22.2 million in midnight ticket sales at 3,003 locations, according to Warner Brothers, putting the popular Boy Wizard movie on track for a record-breaking debut today and through the weekend. And then its first day, it earned $58.4 million. This was on Wednesday, so it was in the middle of the week, and I don't think that gives it a record. 58.4,
no.
Because of course The Dark Knight did a little bit better than that.
These are just ridiculous comparisons. It's, you know, people say, oh, The Weeknd, it didn't keep up pace after that midnight showing. It made 100 and whatever million. It's going to make $800 million worldwide when all is said and done, just like all the last six Potter movies. You know, it's going to be just in line with everyone else. It's a big, big hit.
Well, the movie is expected to gross more domestically than its predecessor, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, which 2 years ago sold $292 million in tickets, according to the LA Times. The film grossed more than twice that amount overseas with $646.2 million, and it cost more than $400 million to make, so it darn well
No. You're including P&A. This new movie cost $250 million to make, plus an extra $150 million to open worldwide.
Oh, well, you know, if it's only $250 million between friends, what's the difference?
It was a big jump, $100 million more than the last movie and the last few. They say it's all on screen, but I think what happened is the new deals kicked in. You've got, you know, the four actors, the kids need to make money. You've got big names, people who have been with these movies for four movies, and they've made billions of dollars. Everybody's getting their payday now, and they deserve it. If the movie's making if it makes $900 million worldwide, you got to pony up at some point. You know, you got three more movies. These people deserve their money.
So what did you think of the movie?
I thought it was pretty good. It's sort of interesting. One idiot said, oh, it's just keeping pace with the other five movies. Well, how many movies, six movies into the series are keeping pace with the original? It's amazing how well it's done commercially. And I think this one is probably about as good as The Prisoner of Azkaban, which is the best one.
Which is the third one, I think. I believe, right? That was number three, yeah. You know, I have to say, I can't even remember the Order of the Phoenix, so I actually had to refresh my memory. I haven't seen Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, but I think I'm going to go and rent Order of the Phoenix just to watch it again so that I can remember what the heck was going on. I can't remember.
That's the funny thing. I don't think I've ever seen them. You know, The Lord of the Rings was like this, but I can't think of any other series where six movies in, you literally have to see the previous movies. Like if you see The Dark Knight, it doesn't matter. If you see the new Superman, the new Spider-Man, they basically stand on their own. If you can see a new James Bond, it doesn't matter if you skipped all of Roger Moore's oeuvre, you still know what's going on. It's a James Bond flick. But this movie literally begins in the middle and ends in the middle. There is no attempt to bring in or explain to anyone who doesn't know what's going on, what's going on. You literally have to know the books, which isn't a big problem because they're some of the most popular books of all time. And these movies are selling almost $1 billion worldwide for each movie. It's just an unbelievable phenomenon.
Well, this weekend, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince made $79.4 million. And since its opening last Wednesday, it's made $159.6 million in North America. That, of course, made it the top movie of the weekend. Ice Age Dawn of the Dinosaurs, the third film in that series, made $17.7 million, dropping off 35%, and its total gross to date is $152 million. Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, you were just talking about that, Michael, it made $13.7 million. It dropped off 43.2%, and it's made in North America $363.8 million. Bruno, which Sacha Baron Cohen's film, which opened last weekend,
horrible,
dropped off 72.7%. So, Michael, you win the award. You said it was going to fall off a cliff, and I think it fell off the world. It made $8.3 million, and to date has made $49.5 million, which I'm sure is a success, because how much could that movie really have cost to make?
Well, they paid like $35 or $40 million up front for that movie, I think. I remember when Borat was happening, they made the deal sight unseen for Bruno. And it was a good amount of money for the movie, but it might have been even $50 million, but worldwide I think they'll be okay.
Rounding out the top five this weekend was The Hangover, which is still going strong. It only dropped 16%. It made $8.3 million in North America this weekend. To date, it has made $235.8 million in North America. Not bad.
And I still haven't seen it.
At this point, you may as well wait for the DVD.
I probably will. I have a confession to make. I have not seen any of the Harry Potter movies. I have not read any of the books, except for the first one, which I hated.
Oh, I interviewed J.K. Rowling. I liked it so much.
Yeah, I really liked
that
book.
Oh, wow. That's impressive.
It was back then. She doesn't do any interviews anymore. I interviewed her for Entertainment Weekly. And
what is she, J.D. Salinger? She's not doing interviews?
She's got too many demands. She does like a big, you know, she does an appearance or whatever. And, you know, she doesn't, you know, maybe one to ABC or something and one to the BBC, but that's about it. She doesn't sit down and do 1,000 interviews. She'd never stop. So yeah, she stopped after basically the third book doing interviews, other than like one or two really, really big ones. But she's not some sort of recluse. She just, you know, this was when the books were just beginning.
Years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, this was the first book was on the New York Times bestseller list, which was unbelievable. You know, children's books rarely did that at the time. And the second book had just come out and was doing really well. And we were like, oh my God, these books are so popular. This is unbelievable. And
oh,
it was
wow.
Literally, they'd sold hundreds of thousands of copies. It was unbelievable. And of course, it is steamrolled. But she was delightful. Very, very nice person.
Well, it's funny you should mention that word recluse, because that is what a word used in our next story. and that story, it's actually two stories, or three, really, if you count the news about this particular person's blog being sold, but it's about Nikki Fink. Earlier in the week, James Rainey had an article or wrote an article in the Los Angeles Times about Nikki Fink and her blog Deadline Hollywood Daily, which we often cite here on Showbiz Sandbox. And then following that up, David Carr, the carpetbagger blogger, that's really hard to say, but he wrote an article in the New York Times called A Hollywood Blogger Feared by Executives. James Rainey's piece in the LA Times was titled Being Relentless and Sharp Pays Off for Deadline Hollywood Daily's Nikki Fink. Now, I asked James Rainey, I gave him a call and asked him to appear with us this week, and he said... Well, after he said I sounded like a 19-year-old, that was his first question. he asked, who is this? What show? How old are you? And when I told him that I was in my late 30s, he then said, oh, you sound like you're 19. And I said, well, I kind of look that way too. But he was actually very nice. He wrote an article on Nikki Fink and her blog Deadline Hollywood Daily and how it was sold to, well, I guess it was a profile of Nikki Fink and the news surrounding her sale of that blog to Mail.com Media for a reported $14 million, according to Sharon Waxman of The Wrap. Although there is somewhat of a debate online as to whether that figure is accurate or not, or whether it would be paid out over time, or whether there were performance clauses. But either way, people are saying that it was at least a $7 million, seven-figure deal, or possibly even an eight-figure deal.
Well, she doesn't have money woes, does she?
I guess not. although she has press woes because she was in both the LA Times and New York Times. James Rainey writes here, Fink got the scoop, for example, when William Morris and Endeavor merged to form a super talent agency. And Hollywood wallowed in the guilty pleasure, as one exec called it, when she posted the goodbye email of a departing William Morris agency assistant, chock full of funny and salacious details about odd and assorted Hollywood types. He goes on to mention Patrick Goldstein's column. Patrick Goldstein writes the Big Picture column for the Los Angeles Times. He wrote this spring about a particularly egregious example when Fink claimed to know who would be named as the director of the third Twilight vampire film, only to be proved wrong. And Karen, that's something you found interesting. That she
rewrites history. She will make these, you know, these grand declarations of what's going to happen, and then something else happens, and then she goes into her archives and she just changes it and claims that it was that way all along.
That's what James Rainey is citing here in his article, which he does a pretty good job of pointing out, and he actually credits Goldstein and Bill Wyman of the Hitsville blog, showed in detail how Fink subsequently rewrote her original post in an attempt to make it look as if she had always been equivocal about the selection of the director. Fink posted her own rebuttal and insisted to me that it was the Times and her other critics who got it wrong and owed her an apology. I quote, "I talked about an offer to the director, and I never said every number was nailed down or was a done deal," she said. And we did offer her a chance to appear here as well to talk about these two stories, and we never heard back from her.
I like that. It makes us sound like 60 Minutes. We gave Nikki Fink a chance to speak with us. I think if she goes back and changes her predictions and, you know, she's supposed to be Miss Insider, I think that's ridiculous. If you get it wrong, you should live with it. I go back in my articles and maybe correct a fact error or something that's not, that's, you know, a name spelling or a factual error that just makes the article more accurate. But if I say this is going to happen, or I believe this, or this show will win the Emmy, this executive is about to be fired, you can't change the name to another executive just to make yourself look smarter. But I do have to defend her in one way. The New York Times said in its article, her liabilities in the world of print, a penchant for innuendo and unnamed sources, became assets online. I don't think that is an asset, a penchant for innuendo and unnamed sources. And as Nikki Fink linked to a criticism of the New York Times article, this article about her begins with innuendo and unnamed sources. So it's pretty hilarious that they would slam her for that, and they did the very same thing in their article about her. It just shows the lowering of standards all around.
Well, and at the end of the day, I think Nikki Fink has a lot of sources here in Hollywood, and she really does get a lot of scoops. The New York Times pointed out, and I'm quoting here, during the recent parting of the ways between Paramount Film Group and John Lesher, the former president, she ran a picture of Mr. Lesher with a big red X over his face and a series of breathless news breaks until he was out, finishing him off by quoting him accurately saying, "Nikki Fink knew about it before I did." David Carr writes, and I love this, because Nikki Fink is kind of known as, she can be somewhat thorny, I guess would be the right word, or somewhat...
Rhymes with witch? Yeah.
No, I mean, she's a tough journalist. Yeah. She's really tough. And, you know, and I mean that in a both...
good way.
Yeah, I mean it in a positive way. And as a matter of fact, James Rainey, when I invited him on, said, he said, well, I don't think so. I don't want to get into it with Nikki. And I don't blame him, frankly. My exact words to him were, given the subject matter, I can understand that and I appreciate your candor. He then went on to say, and this is a bit of an aside, how all of new media, so websites and podcasts like this one, are continuously bashing mainstream media, such as the Los Angeles Times and New York Times, and yet we continue to ask people like him onto our shows or quote them in blogs. And he just said maybe journalists should stop doing that. But, you know, hopefully we are pointing people back to the stories that we are referencing, as opposed to just lifting them from the sources.
Well, he doesn't listen to our podcast because we don't trash traditional media at all.
No,
we don't do that.
No, as a matter of fact, we cite them continuously. In fact, I will cite, as I was saying before, just to get back onto the Nikki Fink track here. You know, Nikki Fink's reputation as being tough kind of precedes her. And David Carr writes, in a telephone interview, Miss Fink said the stories about her thuggish ways were just that. Quote, "I don't bully and terrify people," she said, cheerfully adding, "I'm not mean, I just write mean." I thought that was a perfect quote. And, you know, she's also known somewhat of as a, and here's where this word comes in, a recluse, never leaving her apartment. Nobody's seen her for years, so to speak, and I don't buy that either. She says to James Rainey of the Los Angeles Times, "I've never been happier. I told you I am not a recluse. I'm sorry I don't tell people each time I move. Alert the media, Nikki Fink is going outdoors."
It's just silly. Anybody who doesn't live stream their life online is considered a recluse by Hollywood standards.
Well, I also thought that her reasons for not going to premieres and, you know, Hollywood parties and such was actually a pretty good one. That she doesn't really want to mingle with her sources or people that she's written about. Makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, plus they're boring.
They are so boring. Yes, thank you for pointing that out. There's no such thing as a glamorous Hollywood party. They're always really boring.
You know, I was actually just yesterday evening, a friend of mine had a Sprint phone, a Samsung Sprint phone, and he was showing me how it received television. And I was watching this, I guess it was on the E! Network, but they were interviewing some actress, and they were asking her who the hottest actors were that she would like to act opposite. And she said, oh, you know, who's that guy who does the Wolverine thing? I really like him. And I just thought, are you kidding me?
Oh,
you're
no.
You're walking a red carpet and you can't remember who
Hugh
plays...
Jackman.
Hugh Jackman is.
Unbelievable.
And that he does the Wolverine thing? Is that a quote? Is that really what she said?
Yeah. Yeah. The guy who does Wolverine.
Does the Wolverine thing. Yeah, okay.
Good job.
Yeah. Well, I think we enjoy the media wherever it is, whether it's traditional or online. But actually looking through her column, which I never did until you guys turned me onto it, looking at it to prepare for the story, I had issues with a few things that she wrote. And more power to her. She's got a voice and she's got contacts, so she's doing a great job.
And I do agree that she's a good journalist and that she gets the stories and she reports them. But she editorializes a lot.
Well, she's also a blogger, so in her defense...
Well,
that
yeah,
is precisely
and
what
you
people
know, when you
go
write
to her
online,
for.
I do find that you people appreciate having your own opinions in it a lot. But she, it's a strange line that she walks between reporting facts and just giving her own opinions. But she has her favorites, and she has the people that you know that are not her favorites. And clearly, John Lesher she doesn't like, and clearly she has no respect for Seacrest, and you know. But there are also certain people she like. You know, she'll never touch. She never touches, or rarely touches, Brad Grey. She never touches Ron Meyer. I mean, she has her favorites, and then she has the people that she just for no apparent reason will kind of just quash.
Well, clearly we are not among her favorites because she did not respond to my email to appear here. And hopefully she does and will actually take us up on the offer. We'd love to have her on. A self-plug there. We're plugging ourselves.
Well, we do quote her nearly every week.
Yeah, so and I mentioned that in my email to her that, you know, at least once per week, if not more, we're pointing people to her stories. And so it would be nice to speak with her about what she thinks of all of these stories. Certainly, I personally wish her a lot of luck at her new gig there with Mail.com Media, and I look forward to seeing how the blog changes. If it changes, it may not change at all. And I think we're going to be doing the same for one of our old friends, Ann Thompson, who is moving her blog, Thompson on Hollywood, to IndieWire.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. It seems like a good fit.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's a great fit, and I think that Eugene Hernandez, who is the head of IndieWire or the editor of IndieWire, is I've always said he was really a genius and just so progressive, and this just once again goes to prove that is the case.
Well, I don't know if it's genius to take a writer for Variety and who's looking for work and has a great credentials to work for your movie website, but it's certainly a smart move.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's put it this way: if he wasn't a well-respected editor and a well-respected journalist, then people like Ann Thompson wouldn't be inclined to take up residence there.
Well, that's not the same as a genius, though. I don't like to toss the word genius
He's
around.
Arguing your semantics, Burley.
Genius is a very strong word.
All right. So it's a smart move on his part. Moving on.
Well, yeah. And congratulations to Ann Thompson. You know, ironically, I read this like maybe 24 hours after last emailing her. So I look forward to seeing how her... blog changes. I don't think, you know, her writing will change at all. She's always been very consistent.
It's just an example of changing world. You know, newspapers and magazines are dying and online is still existing. And if they can afford to support a talented writer who has a track record like Ann Thompson, great.
Right. Well, we'll have to get Ann on and she can tell us all about it. Maybe we can get both Ann and Nikki on and they can both talk about, you know, their new gigs.
That'll be interesting.
Well, Nikki does have one item that I thought was interesting. If you're going to point people to her blog, she has a thing saying that the bidding for the footage from Michael Jackson's rehearsal concert to make a feature film out of it has started at $50 million, which seems insane. It seems insane to me.
Even more insane that it wasn't Roger Friedman reporting that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure he'll be following up on it, absolutely.
I agree. And if you really want to read up on Nikki Fink and Ann Thompson and all the moves that they're making, as well as read what I consider to be a very interesting blog, the Spout blog. It can be found at blog.spout.com, and we'll place a link to the story, Nikki Fink and Ann Thompson Move Up, Today in Film Bloggery, 71709. And Christopher Campbell does a very good job every day of going to all the film blogs and kind of taking little excerpts from them. We'd like to thank Corby Ghosh for joining us to talk about the Emmys. Again, her blog can be found at blog.zaptoit.com/CorbyTV. And she can be followed on Twitter. Corby Girl is the name to look up. Michael can always be found at michaelgiltz.com. Karen, is there anything you want to plug?
Just showbizsandbox.com.
One would have hoped that people had already found that. For links to any of the stories we discussed on this week's episode, you can visit our website, Showbiz Sandbox, as Karen mentioned, and you can look them up in the show notes. You can also find links to all of the social networking accounts that we have, from Twitter to LinkedIn to Facebook. If you want to email us, you can do so. dirt@showbizsandbox.com is the address. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can also leave us a voicemail message at 888-567-SAND. That number again is 888-567-7263. If you want to submit a news story for us to consider covering on a future episode, you can do so either via email or you can do so through the social bookmarking website, Delicious. Just tag the story with Showbiz Sandbox, all one word. Other than that, I don't know that there's really too much more for us to discuss this week, although we should mention that midweek we're going to have a special episode of Showbiz Sandbox with Stephen Brook from The Guardian in London. He wrote a fascinating article on TMZ and how they managed to get the scoop that Michael Jackson had died. They were the first to report the news, and he tells us how they were able to do that. Anything else, guys?
That's it.
That's it. Until next week, play nice.